And we're back here on Unusual Sources, 93.3 CFMU FM, broadcasting to Hamilton at 93.3 on the FM dial and the rest of the world at cfmu.mcmaster.ca. And today we're going to be speaking with Sid Schneid, a member of the National Steering Committee of Independent Jewish Voices. He's been a guest on our program before, and we're very pleased to have him back. Let's see if we've got him on the line. Hi, Sid, can you hear me?
Yes, Brendan, I hear you loud and clear.
Okay, I heard you a bit faintly, so I'm just going to boost your volume there. Great. Well, thanks for joining us today. Again, we had a very productive interview with you last time, and one of the ways in which you've been contributing to activism on Israel-Palestine is through the IPME, the Israel-Palestine Middle East List. You've been aggregating news articles all over the world on this subject. I've thought that you're perhaps well-placed to comment on something that I've been seeing, this avalanche of new articles about Israel, looking at their internal problems, Palestine, a wide range of issues, I suppose. There was the Guardian article I just saw the other day, United Kingdom raises concerns over Israel's treatment of Palestinian children, not something I'm used to seeing. So I thought I should perhaps start out by asking, in a general sense, do you think that there's been a shift in the manner in which Western news has been reporting on Israel?
I think there may be a shift that both the news and governments are reacting, along with the change in coverage in the press, where things are being covered from an angle that we've never seen before. Governments are expressing concerns. Now, you wouldn't know that living in Canada, where the Harper government's completely onside anything that comes out of Israel, and the Obama government is terrified of the Israel lobby. But out of Europe, you have people like Nicolas Sarkozy, the Prime Minister of France, openly criticizing Israel for its intransigence, and the European Union expressing frustration that Israel's ever-expanding settlement project is undermining the prospects for there being a creation of a Palestinian state. So both these things are happening, I think. In the past, the media was leery of criticizing or pressing, publishing anything that was critical of Israel, but at the same time, the governments weren't criticizing Israel. So I think that both things may be changing at once.
Absolutely. I did notice some articles on Sarkozy's comments and related subjects in the French press. And we have different expectations out of what's being reported in Europe. Over here in North America, it seems there's a few broad categories in which there's been some new kinds of reporting or a shift in the discussion. I think one of them right now, obviously, is on the subject of Iran. There was that recent column in the New York Times by Roger Cohen that was called, "Don't Do It, Bibi." Don't do it in reference to war with Iran. There's a few themes there I noticed. It suggested that the Israeli government was acting in a more sensationalist manner about Iranian nuclear capability than the United States was. And also, it kind of portrayed Israel as a self-interested player maneuvering for advantages within the U.S. political system. And finally, I think the article demonstrated some anger at the Netanyahu administration or the Israeli government itself. Do you think that, I mean, have you seen other articles about Israel and Iran like that one in the Western press?
I'm having difficulty personally sussing out what's really going on there. There was an announcement last week of the cancellation of jointly planned Israel-U.S. war games. And the initial story that I read on that in the press indicated that this was rooted in American resentment of an Israeli manipulation of the U.S. and that the U.S. didn't want to be seen as onside everything Israel was doing at the time when Israel seemed to be pedal to the metal for war against Iran. But then I read a subsequent news analysis of this, which indicated the exact opposite, that the cancellation of the joint war games was not initiated by Israel, but in fact by the by the United States, but in fact by the government of Netanyahu, and that moving it later into the year would actually strengthen the Netanyahu government's ability to launch such a war. So, I mean, this is really confusing. But at least there is some kind of a degree, however insufficient, a degree of the discussion of these related issues, which I don't think we've seen before.
Yeah, you're right. It is confusing when you look at the reporting because some of it does complain about seeming Israeli pressure to move on the issue of Iran, to possibly strike Iran. Other articles seem to be about the American administration slowing things down or not allowing certain things to occur. So it's not clear where we're heading. There has been some odd developments. There was the article False Flag by Mark Perry in Foreign Policy, which is a conventional U.S. publication, and that one talked about CIA memos about Mossad agents that posed as Americans so that they could allegedly recruit members of Jundallah, or an organization classified as a terrorist organization to fight a covert war against Iran, according to the article. Now, I mean, that's a bit new. I'm not used to reading coverage or hearing coverage about Israel possibly working with or recruiting from a terrorist group in order to intervene in Iran. So that's a new development, even if such publications often back off from looking at how the U.S. involves itself in such organizations as well.
Well, the thing is, if you step back from that, I think it's indicative that there are some elements of the American government and the British government that are complaining off the record to the press about the role that Israel is playing, which I think is a good sign, which means that there is some daylight opening up between the governments of Britain and the U.S. and that of Israel. But on the other hand, every time you begin to get encouraged about this, there's some statement made or step taken by the American government to prove that it is 1,000% absolutely supportive of Israel and anything and everything it does. So I think there's probably some to-ing and fro-ing going on inside the government that we're seeing reflected to some degree in the press.
Well, in terms of that 1,000% support for Israel, that's part of the subject of one of the other areas where news is congregating. And I think that's just on the issue of Palestine generally. And one of the big themes in U.S. coverage seems to be that the U.S. is demonstrating favoritism towards Israel. There's been more and more talk about the special relationship, mentions of the Israel lobby. And in the case of Palestine, the Chicago Tribune, they ran that article saying that Israel is breaking settlement records, according to Peace Now. So more and more settlements. That's the other issue of it, settlements. But the vetoes by the United States get some attention, the manner in which the U.S. continues to favor Israel in the United Nations. And there's been similar commentary as well. So I think it's possible that when you look at the issue of Palestine, a major theme of the new emerging coverage is that the U.S. is a one-sided broker in that sense. We're getting more and more admission that we're not getting an even-handed policy towards Israel-Palestine in the United States.
Mm-hmm. I think that's clearly true. I think the difficulty, insofar as the issue of the role of the press is concerned, is that while I think it's good that there is a new light being shown on some of these issues, I don't think it's sufficient. A friend of mine who is a longtime Palestinian solidarity activist made the comment that it doesn't really matter what happens in terms of public opinion as long as the power of the Israel lobby remains intact. And he's talking about these fabulously rich billionaires like Adelson, the gambling magnate, who has just spent a tremendous amount. I think between himself and his wife, they put $10 million toward the candidacy of Newt Gingrich in the U.S. And he seemed to be nowhere on the political scene in the midst of the Republican primary races. But then came this injection of funds from Adelson and his wife, and then Gingrich achieved new prominence, and what's he talking about? The need to make war on Iran. So, and he's talking about the Palestinians not being, historically not being a people. All of these cliches and positions straight out of the Israel lobby. So you have that kind of influence from a relatively small number of people who are very rich and powerful who can get resolutions out of the U.S. Congress. I believe there was 100% vote in the U.S. Senate, 100 out of 100 senators voting in favor of the strongest sanctions bill that has ever passed the U.S. Senate against Iran. So the general public, I think, is becoming more and more uncomfortable with the relationship between the U.S. and Israel. And that's manifested in some things like the strength that Ron Paul is demonstrating in the Republican primaries, where he's speaking against these kind of alliances for the U.S. government. On the other hand, when it comes down to actually delivering action from the Senate or from the President of the U.S., they're all terrified of the Israel lobby, its wealth, and its power.
Well, the Republican primaries are certainly relevant here. And you mentioned Newt Gingrich. That has been drawing attention to certain issues, the support by the Christian right for Israel. That's been commented on in the past, but I think there's more reference to the term Christian Zionism in the sense that there is that base among segments of the conservative movement in the United States as well. It's interesting the manner in which you have suggested that the discourse may be changing, but the reality on the ground and in terms of U.S. policy has not been changing so much. So are we seeing here a situation then where there's greater acceptability or there's been a widening of the discourse, more things are mentioned in the press, but it's not significantly impacting policy?
That's what it seems like to me. Every time I begin to grasp a little bit at some event or statement made by an American politician or the U.S. State Department or something like that, back comes in response a statement by Obama or Hillary Clinton about the unshakable relationship with Israel, the unique, special relationship, you know, all these kinds of positions. And nothing concrete done to actually rein Israel in. I mean, I think it's interesting to see how there's expressions of concern about Israel launching a war on Iran and then dragging the U.S. into it. That supposedly the chairman of the U.S. Joint Chiefs of Staff was being sent over to Israel to deliver them a message that they shouldn't consider initiating such an attack because the U.S. wouldn't automatically be drawn in behind them. Nevertheless, there's nothing concrete and tangible done by the U.S. government to actually draw a line in the sand in relation to the Netanyahu government or other Israeli governments. The U.S. could jerk Israel's chain sharply and put an end to this stuff right away if it chose to end the financial and military aid that it gives to Israel on a unique basis, I mean, to a larger extent than any other government in the world. That far, or along, it is reluctant to go that far or to make moves in that direction, which is what's really necessary to change Israeli behavior.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's interesting. The media here is increasingly, as you say, looking at instances where Israel may be pushing for something more heavily than the United States, on the case of Iran, for example. But what they don't talk about is the manner in which the United States has enormous sway over Israel, and it has a lot of power to dissuade Israel from undertaking certain actions. But
if it chose to exercise that power, and that's the problem. All of the American political establishment is under the influence of the Israel lobby when it comes to issues like this, and they're all terrified for their political futures if they venture to move in that direction.
Well, it's clear that there's perhaps some frustration by U.S. policymakers over this relationship that is starting to, as you say, create daylight between certain parties. So Iran, the approach to that is an issue, the continuing deadlock on Palestine. I think another issue has become apparent, perhaps the third major congregation of articles here, and that is perhaps increasing focus on the ultra-Orthodox community in Israel. I know that there's been a number of stories since late 2011, since the winter, about certain incidents and events within Israel, referring to certain differences in Israeli society or perhaps forms of segregation. I think this originated partly with the story of the 8-year-old girl. She had been bullied and spat on for, I believe, appearing immodest. And then there was a series of protests on that. So that actually generated multiple articles, didn't it?
That's a very interesting incident. The girl herself was Orthodox, but not sufficiently Orthodox for some of the Haredim in Israel. And they abused her. And then there's the case of the woman who refused to move to the back of the bus when one of the Haredi had demanded that she do that. And I think what's important about this is, well, there's two things. I think the publicity around such incidents helps shed light on reality in Israel, and I think it serves to tarnish the notion that Israel is a liberal democracy like any other, which is what Israel and its supporters want the world to believe. Israel has a growing ultra-Orthodox minority. The population of the ultra-Orthodox population is growing much faster than the rest of the Israeli population because they have large families. I heard on the CBC radio this morning an interview with people in Israel on this very subject. I think it was a member of the Knesset complaining about the fact that the ultra-Orthodox don't have to serve in the army, they don't have to work, yet they are beneficiaries of the Israeli welfare state. And this is creating tremendous tensions in the population of Israel. There is another factor, I think, that really needs light shed on it, and that is the fact that because of Israel's political system, which is based on proportional representation, a form of proportional representation, these tiny ultra-Orthodox religious parties like Shas are essential for any party that wants to form a coalition government. They need to include tiny parties like Shas. So Shas has ministers in the Netanyahu government. Now, if you think about that, Netanyahu is hard right to begin with. Then, in order to form a coalition, he has to lure parties like Shas in, which is far right wing and ultra orthodox, and maintain their presence in his coalition by doing what they want vis-a-vis education and religious policy, funding of religious schools, etc. So you have this relatively small minority wielding enormous power over the whole Israeli polity, and that's a very scary prospect.
Yes, one could see how this could create dissension in the ranks, both in Israel and also in the United States. Among American voters generally, there are a lot of people who are liberal Democrats or left-wing in other forms, and it would be increasingly difficult to endorse certain policies or forms of discrimination that appear within Israel, especially with the current government. And I'll get to that in a moment. But, of course, there's also a considerable body of liberal democratic opinion in Israel and, of course, among the American Jewish population, youth as well. So there could be an increasing divide here. With the election of the current government, perhaps some of those issues or divides have widened. I mean, it could be a cause of some of the changed reporting we've seen on the subject.
Well, I think that's the case, that people are experiencing more and more discontent about this. But then I think there's the tension between their allegiance to Israel, right or wrong, the Jewish state, as a Jewish homeland, which is their key core belief, and their unhappiness about these developments. As far as I can tell, things have not reached the stage where people within Israel or Israel supporters outside in any significant number are willing to embrace hard tactics and strategies designed to force change of behavior on the Israeli government and change of policies domestically. And that, I think, is the key. And I think there is the parallel to the situation in the U.S. Even though people are increasingly aware of aspects of Israeli society and its behavior that makes them unhappy, as long as the government of the U.S. continues to give unyielding, unflinching support for Israel, it's of secondary importance. It only will matter when American people are sufficiently up in arms about the U.S. relationship to Israel that they are capable of organizing to force their politicians to change the U.S. relationship to Israel.
Uh-huh. So we've seen some cracks of daylight here, although the actions of the U.S. government have not really changed. I guess it's a good way to wrap up in just thinking about one article that inspired me to ask you about this, and that's from Salon magazine on the Internet. That article is by Jordan Michael Smith. It's called "The Media Consensus on Israel is Collapsing," and it suggests that once taboo criticism is now common. Now, when you actually go into the article, what it really looks at is how there's a growing number of voices, academics and certain policy experts, that they employ more criticism of the U.S. relationship with Israel and Israeli domestic or foreign policy, and there's more references to the lobby, the Israeli lobby. I'm not sure it would be right to say that the media consensus on Israel is collapsing unless we knew precisely what that consensus was. It's more of a shifting than, again, a widening of the terms of discourse.
I agree with you completely. I mean, if it were collapsing, I think we would see much wider discussion of these issues. It's very rare if we ever see anything critical of Israel on something like CBC TV News or network news in the U.S. It's difficult for the subject of Israel to come up at all unless Israel is portrayed as a victim of terrorism or something like that.
And certainly the war on terror itself, starting in 2001, that in some areas moved the discourse into a more pro-Israel direction. Israel was trying to portray its interests the same as the United States. Maybe after 10 years of the war on terror, as Americans tire of that war, they're also starting to question that relationship that experienced somewhat of a change in 2001.
I think the difficulty we're facing is that to date, the only high-profile U.S. politician who is taking a stance critical of the war on terror and the American empire and its military spending and stuff like that is Ron Paul, who has some questionable views on other issues. What we really need is some prominent Democrats or other public figures to be standing up and making parallel criticism.
Well, ultimately, I guess what we're seeing is the cracks of daylight in certain discussions in the Republican primaries, in the media, in Canada, in the United States, in Israel, and elsewhere. So maybe those cracks of daylight will lead to something else. We'll have to see. As you've said, the policy changes have yet to follow, so we'll have to see where it goes from there. Certainly a very interesting development. And we'll have to keep following the IPME list. We appreciate those articles. I think members, journalists, everyone that's following all the global issues can benefit from catching that news. So thanks for providing that service as well.
Thanks a lot, Brendan.
And okay, well, we'll talk to you later, and we'll watch those developments. Thanks for being here today, Sid.
You're welcome.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.